Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll start off with a statement by the Secretary General, followed by a statement from the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, and then we'll have time to take your questions. Secretary General.
Thank you. Prime Minister Schoof, dear Dick, it's great to have you here in Brussels, and it's always good to see you. We have just concluded productive discussions on a range of critical issues, but let me begin by expressing my gratitude to you in the Netherlands for your steadfast contributions to our collective defense. The Netherlands continues to play a pivotal role in strengthening our alliance. Dutch troops are deployed as part of NATO's forces in Lithuania, bolstering our deterrence and defense on the eastern flank. Dutch F-35s contribute to NATO's air policing missions in the Baltic region, protecting our airspace and our people. And you also protect us right here, guarding Benelux airspace alongside the Belgian Air Force. A Dutch ship is currently leading one of NATO's maritime groups. And you build stability beyond our borders. In Iraq, a Dutch Lieutenant General, Lucas Schreurs, commands the NATO mission, and Dutch instructors continue to train local forces to stabilize the region and counter terrorism. I would also, of course, like to thank you for the excellent cooperation in organizing the NATO summit in The Hague and also the related events on the 24th and the 25th of June next month. Boosting defense spending to strengthen our collective security is our top summit priority. In 2024, the Netherlands invested 2% of GDP in defense, and your plans to modernize your land forces and your investments in cutting-edge capabilities, such as F-35 aircraft, frigates, this will enhance our interoperability, our readiness, and our strength. And just last week, you announced the acquisition of 46 Leopard tanks. But it is clear that 2% will not be nearly enough to meet the capability targets that allies will soon agree. And to ensure our alliance remains able and ready to deter aggression and to protect our 1 billion people, we need to invest more in our essential military needs and in broader defense-related areas, like infrastructure, resilience, but also in our defense industry. Your government's recent decision to allocate over 1 billion euros for the expansion of the Dutch defense industry is an example for others to follow. And of course, we discussed Russia's ongoing war against Ukraine. I very much welcome your promise to deliver an impressive 3.5 billion euros in support for Ukraine in 2026, as well as 700 million euros to procure drones. And your recent announcement of 100 million euros to NATO's comprehensive assistance package for Ukraine, this also underscores your unwavering commitment to Kyiv's sovereignty and security. And this is a priority we all share. And while we reiterated our full support to the urgent efforts to bring the war to a just and lasting end, we must also continue to ensure Ukrainians have the resources they need to protect themselves. So once again, thank you, dankjewel, Dick, for your presence here today and for your personal dedication to our alliance. I look forward to opening the World Forum Summit venue with you next month. And with that, it's my honor and pleasure to give you the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, dear Secretary General, dear Mark. And thank you for your introduction and for the opportunity to sit down with you today and look ahead to the upcoming NATO summit in The Hague. This is the first time since NATO was founded in 1949 that the Netherlands has been chosen to host a summit, thanks in part to your diplomatic efforts. And we are proud to be chosen because it underlines our dedication to the transatlantic alliance, an alliance that remains as relevant as ever, even after more than 75 years. If you still have time to take a quiet bike ride through your hometown, Mark, you will see that the logistical preparation in The Hague are nicely on track. And over the next 5 weeks, it's up to the Netherlands and the 31 other member countries to work towards an end goal that everyone's firm and, above all, collective support. The Netherlands believe that we need to pursue two main tracks. Firstly, we must strengthen the NATO alliance, with Europe taking more responsibility for its own security and for the safety of the people in Europe and in the Netherlands. We need to invest more in defence and boost our military effectiveness in the broader sense of the word. That's essential, given the major threats we face, such as Russia's rapid military build-up. The urgency of strengthening NATO's European pillar is widely felt, including in the Netherlands. In the run-up to the summit, we are holding intensive talks on what exactly will be needed. And as a host country, the Netherlands is working to get all countries on the same page as much as possible. And in The Hague, we will make agreements that all member countries can get behind. Secondly, we must ensure that the money that's made available in the years ahead can actually be spent. We won't achieve anything with these funds just sitting around in bank accounts. Russia is now a war economy, so we can't afford to lag behind. The European defence industry needs a major boost so that our factories can start running at full capacity and produce more materials in innovative ways. During the NATO summit, the Netherlands will be bringing together public authorities, companies and defence sector experts for Defence Industry Forum to discuss how to accelerate the scale-up process. We will use the forum's results to help us equip our armed forces in a rapid and sustainable manner. Naturally, all of this will be done against the backdrop of unwavering support for Ukraine. We need to give the strongest possible position from which to achieve a lasting and just peace. But it doesn't stop there. Whatever the outcome of the talks will be, we will ensure that Ukraine can defend itself against any future Russian aggression. Russia must realize that we will continue investing in a successful and resilient Ukraine and that we are fully committed to the security of Ukraine and its entire continent. In short, at this year's summit, we aim to take crucial steps to enhance transatlantic cooperation and security. In today's security climate, it's vital that we show our adversaries that our alliance is determined and, above all, united. Speaking on behalf of the summit's host country, I want to stress that more than anything, because, of course, NATO can deploy the strongest tanks, the newest drones and the most advanced AI tools, but ultimately one weapon is superior to them all and offers the best deterrence there is, and that's unity. Thank you.
All right, we now have time for a few questions. I would be grateful if we could ask the questions in English, please, for the sake of the room and our online audience. All right, I'll start here with the glasses. Yes.
Good to see you all, by the way. I have two questions, if I may. One for the Secretary General. 5 weeks to go. What are the most critical points that keep you awake going into the summit? And for the Prime Minister, how are you going to convince the public and Parliament to spend so much money on extra money on defence in the coming years if Donald Trump says that he simply trusts Putin? So the main adversary of this organisation, that's where we're all putting up all this money for, is not seen as a real danger in the US, it seems.
Well, I'm not sure I would completely agree with your assessment on that specific issue. But to your question, to me, I must say I sense broad-based support for what we need to achieve in The Hague. And that is indeed considerably more spending on defence and on everything which is related to defence. Because you not only have to spend on defence itself, we also have to build the defence industrial base. We have to spend money on resilience. We have to make sure that a bridge is not only holding our cars, but also capable to carry our tanks and our railways, etc., etc. So there is a lot to be done. And that will be much more money. I'm not confirming the numbers which are out there. This is good journalism, so I respect you for that, but not up to me to confirm anything because we are still discussing that. But I feel broad-based support, and I think we will get there. And that is important because we have a couple of things at the same time. One is we have this whole process in NATO which will lead to an assessment of the gaps we have in our defence. And they are considerable. Today we can defend ourselves, but between 3 and 5 years we have a problem. That's problem one. And that's why we need to fill those gaps, make sure that we reach the capability targets, and the capability targets we will agree on with the defense ministers on June 5th, and that will then lead into the summit and also advise us on how much money we need to spend. So there's a clear link between the money spent and what we need to spend it on, and that has a link with the capability targets. But there is a second issue, and that is that the Russians are reconstituting themselves much faster than we feared. I said it before. They are now producing, in terms of ammunition, in 3 months what the whole of NATO is producing in a year, and this is only ammunition. And NATO is 25 times bigger as a collective economy than a Russian economy. So that economy, which is 1/25 of the total NATO economy, is producing 4 times in ammunition but the whole of NATO. So that's unsustainable. And that is why, next to spending to develop the defense industrial base and make them produce much, much more than they do now, ramping up production, extra production lines, extra shifts, sweating the assets is really crucial, and getting the innovation going. And thirdly, Ukraine. And on all these issues, I feel a sense of urgency with all the allies. I feel broad-based support for some of the thoughts I brought out and thinking to bring us on to one page. There's still a lot of work to be done. Next step is the defense ministers' meeting, and then, of course, we will go into the summit in The Hague. But I think we will get there.
Well, to address your question, I think that I would agree that I don't agree with your assessment of the U.S. Position. NATO and the talks we have about NATO and spending more defense are related to NATO, and NATO was already in the Cold War times created for defense against Russia. What we now see is a clear and present danger from Russia with an aggressive war in Ukraine. Everything we do is to spend more money for defense so that the European pillar is getting bigger in relation to the American pillar, but still together in the transatlantic relationship. Because NATO is a transatlantic relationship, those two, US, Canada, Europe, should work very closely together. And that's, I think, a reasonable position to discuss in Parliament with the Dutch public, because we need to step up our defense spending, and we can discuss about percentages and the timelines, et cetera, et cetera, but we need to spend our defense spending to make sure that we, in the future, can really can hold peace in Europe. I mean, that's the biggest issue, why we are spending money on defense. And I think that's a good narrative and a possible narrative, and I will spend a lot of time to make sure that we are going to spend more on defense.
Let's hear in the front. Yep.
Good afternoon. First to the Prime Minister, if I may. Yesterday, the Dutch Defence Minister informed Parliament about NATO capability needs and estimated that it will require some 16 to 19 billion euros extra a year for the defence spending, a huge amount of money for the Netherlands. Where will this money come from? And a related question, I think the Netherlands is one of the few countries, maybe the only one, that will not make use of the escape clause in the Stability and Growth Pact as offered by the European Commission for defense spending. Isn't that a huge mistake by putting your own country in a much worse position than all the other EU countries? And to the Secretary General, if I may, in December you said in a newspaper interview that the Netherlands can raise the defense spending by making some small cuts, I quote, to things like pensions and health care. Did you repeat that advice today to your successor? And if not, what other advice did you give? Thank you.
Well, I think I may start this time. You were going very quickly in asking and then a conclusion. First of all, the capability letter that the Minister of Defence sent was a technical exercise based on the NATO requirements to see what is needed. So it was a technical project. And if we want to step up on the capability level the NATO wants all countries to have, we need to step up to this amount of money. But as was also clearly stated in the letter, we did not decide that this is going to be the trajectory we are stepping in. So that's a different discussion that's related to the NATO summit, where I answered the question earlier on, and we have discussion in the Cabinet and Parliament about. And then we'll see where we get and how we will step up our defense spending in the next, well, whatever number of years. And you came to the conclusion that we're putting ourselves in a bad situation because we're not stepping in on the escape clause. I think that's too quick. If we can manage without the escape clause, that's always better than making use of the escape clause.
Yeah, and then to your question, what I tried to say in December is this, that if we stick at the 2% core defense spending, again, we can defend ourselves now. So if Vladimir Putin would think he can attack us, our reaction will be devastating. My worry is about 3 to 5 years from now. Some are saying 7 years from now, but at least in the foreseeable future, we are really in trouble if we do not spend much more. And this is about our collective safety. And then some would be saying, yeah, but this is more a problem for the countries who are bordering on Belarus or Russia, like Estonia or Poland. This is not true. With the latest missile technology out of Russia, the difference between an attack on Poland and an attack on Rotterdam is 5 minutes. So we are all now at the eastern flank, not only those on the map on the eastern flank, but all the countries in NATO on the eastern flank. And then, of course, there was the discussion where to get the money from. And maybe I should have been more complete, because what I should have said is there are a couple of ways to raise that money. Of course, you can shift some spending from one item of spending to other items of spending. You can increase taxation. You can also increase your deficit. I mean, this is not new. This is what every government in Europe and in America and in Canada knows, that there are basically three sources of money, which is the deficit, it is taxation, or making savings elsewhere. And it depends a little bit on the makeup of the government or what happens. But what was behind this is that Europe collectively at this moment is 10% of world economy, but is 50% of the world spending on pensions, healthcare, and social security systems. So with 10% of the economy, we spend 50% of world money spent on these issues, which is great. I mean, I'm not against it. This is why we have such a fantastic part of the world to live in. But, I mean, what is the use of all that spending if you run the risk that you have to learn Russian between now and 10 years? And then you give it to them. So our defense is also very important.
Third row.
Andrew Gray from Reuters. A question for both of you, Prime Minister, as the host of the Hague Summit, and for the Secretary General. You both talked about the importance of showing support for Ukraine. One way that NATO has done that in recent years is by inviting President Zelensky to attend the summit, to address leaders at the summit. Do you anticipate doing that this year? And do you have any concerns about a possible repeat of the Oval Office clash between President Trump and President Zelensky if you do that? Thank you.
Well, as soon as we bring the program out, we will bring the program out. Please wait a little bit, but we will make announcements soon on the exact program of the summit.
As far as we are concerned, we would like to welcome President Zelensky to The Hague. And that point of view is well known by the Secretary General.
Okay. In the center here.
Goedemiddag, Alexander Telegraaf. I have a question on the capability targets. We've seen the Americans who are saying that Europe is not their first priority anymore. There are 100,000 American soldiers in Europe. The new capability targets, are they proof for the situation that we have less American soldiers here on the ground? And a second, if I may, the Hague investment plan will be the biggest budget shift in decades for many countries. Are you going to be more transparent on the capability targets because they are coupled with this plan? Thank you.
Yes, we try to be as open as possible. Obviously, you do not want to make Putin or the Chinese, by the way, they're also building up their armed forces at an incredible speed. And we have terrorism, which is also a threat to NATO. So you do not want to make ones wishing us ill, not well, who are against us, to be much wiser than they are already. But as I said before, this will be about long-range missiles. It will be about command and control systems. It will be about air defense systems, maneuverable land formations. These are four of the key priorities where, as Europeans and Canadians, we have to invest much more in than we are doing at the moment. Forget that you can ever get there with 2%. It will be considerably north of 3%, as I said before. And yes, there is a total link between capability targets and extra money to be spent. There are two other issues, and that is that the Russians, as I said, are reconstituting themselves much faster than we anticipated. And there is a third issue, and that is that there is a total commitment by the Americans to NATO, but that goes hand in hand with an expectation that the Canadians and the Europeans in NATO will more or less spend the same amount of money on defense as they are doing. So this is also a clear thing we have to take into account, which is only logical. And this has been a consistent demand from the Americans for many years, and particularly Donald Trump. When he was in his 45th presidency, he was very clear on this. And I can assure you that Trump 47 is not very different from Trump 45 on that point. And I completely concur with him, because why would Europeans spend less than Americans on our collective defense? So these three reasons, we will be as transparent as possible going forward.
Okay, fourth row.
Thanks. First one is to the Prime Minister. I'll just ask something quite direct. But does the Netherlands plan to agree to the expected 5% defense target at The Hague? And the second one for the Secretary General in regards to the ceasefire talks on Monday. Are you still optimistic about the talks in light of Trump's phone call with Presidents Putin and Zelensky?
Well, to ask your question, In the next few days and weeks, we will discuss intensively in the cabinet and in the parliament probably as well on what are we going to do in the NATO summit. And as the Secretary General said, I mean, a lot of it is focused on the Minister of Foreign Affairs meeting on the 5th of June.
Defense ministers on the
5th of June. We are still in the midst of the progress and, in our talks within the cabinet, but there is an agreement on defense spending, but we have to see in what way. And as I said, unity is important in NATO, and as a host, we strive for unity, and I think that's the most important.
On your second question, let's not think that if it's one phone call, we can solve this terrible war between Russia and Ukraine. Nobody will think that. But the fact that President Trump, when he came into office, broke the deadlock when it comes to discussing directly with Putin, which had not taken place for many years from the American side. Really having this heartfelt ambition, which I totally share with him, of ending this bloodshed. Thousands of people a week dying and getting seriously wounded, on both sides, by the way. And ending this terrible war of aggression of the Russians against Ukraine. Him doing that, being the President of the United States, the most powerful nation on earth, the biggest economy, the biggest military, is important. And on Monday, I think this phone call is necessary. This type of discussions is necessary with the Russians to bring this forward. I think it was very good that he closely coordinated before the phone call with Europe and with Ukraine. And immediately after the phone call, there was a readout and a whole discussion again with Europeans and Ukraine. So, and I spoke today with President Zelensky. We are really working very much together, all of us, to make sure that collectively we do everything we can to bring this terrible war to an end. But it has to be an end point where Putin will never, ever try this again. And this is a lesson we learned in 2014 with the Minsk agreement. So he has to know that when there is a ceasefire / a peace deal, that he will never again try to capture one square kilometer, square mile of Ukraine. That's crucial.
Okay, we have time for one more question. In the center here.
Hello, this is Jolanda from the Dutch press agency ANP. I have a question for Mr. Rutte and for Mr. Schoof. Mr. Rutte, how will it be monitored, the defense spending, on the 5%, or what percentage it will be? Is there a procedure, a special agency who will monitor it? And for Mr. Schoof, can you say something about the big protest last weekend in the Netherlands? You didn't say anything about it on Gaza developments.
Yes, on your first question, NATO has a well-established system where we have agreed collectively what is defense spending and what is not defense spending. For example, developing your defense industrial base is not in the 2% at the moment and will therefore not be in the new target we will establish in The Hague. But when it comes to buying from your own defense industrial base, obviously that is part of the present 2% and the new number going forward. So we will not change those definitions. So there are clear definitions on what countries can put in as defense spending, and NATO is then tracking that, sometimes challenging countries, saying, hey, you might have been a little bit too lenient here and there, a bit too liberal in the definitions, and then you have the debate. But that is a clearly established process, and we will continue using that, and it is well respected by all the allies.
Thank you. I would like to answer the question in Dutch, because I think that's more convenient. But I'm just looking at you, if that's okay, or did you want first another question in English? Because then we probably...
This is the last question. This is the last question, yeah.
Okay, then I will answer in Dutch. I think that's more convenient. De grote demonstratie zondag heeft duidelijk aangegeven dat er echt ontzettend veel mensen zijn in Nederland die zich zorgen maken over de ontwikkeling in Gaza. En dat begrijp ik echt heel erg goed. Ik bedoel, als je de beelden ziet uit Gaza, de catastrofale ontwikkelingen, dat kan niemand onberoerd laten. Ook mij niet. Het is gewoon in die zin verschrikkelijk wat er in Gaza gebeurt. En de blokkade van humanitaire hulp en ook het ontzeggen van medische hulp druist in tegen het internationaal recht. En dat hebben we ook altijd veroordeeld. En we roepen Israël ook elke keer op om te zorgen dat die blokkades worden opgeheven. En ook de hulp die nu gegeven wordt, hebben we ook van gezegd, is eigenlijk te weinig. En je moet het eigenlijk vol openzetten om te zorgen dat die hulp naar Gaza komt. Ik denk dat dat ook ontzettend belangrijk is. En we roepen ook elke keer Israël daartoe op. Zoals minister Veldkamp ook al zei, de hulp die nu wordt doorgelaten is echt te gebrekkig, het is te weinig en dat moet echt gewoon meer. En de uitbreiding van de militaire operaties in Gaza, en ik heb dat ook eerder gezegd, is niet de weg voorwaarts. De weg voorwaarts is ervoor te zorgen dat er toch een staakt het vuren komt. Dat overigens de gijzelaars door Hamas worden vrijgelaten. Dat er gewerkt kan worden aan een twee-staten-oplossing. Dat is de weg voorwaarts. Als ik dat afgelopen zondag, zoals je weet, was ik bij de inauguratie van de nieuwe paus. Toen heb ik ook kort met president Herzog hierover gesproken van Israël. En heb ik hem ook die boodschap overgebracht. En heb ik hem ook gezegd, eigenlijk over die demonstratie die op dat moment in Den Haag plaatsvond. Omdat ik het ook belangrijk vond dat hij zich realiseerde dat er ook een stemming is in Nederland die ook die zorg heel nadrukkelijk uit en ik ook die zorg heel nadrukkelijk heb willen doorgeven.
All right, thank you so much for joining us. Have a good evening.